All right, thank you. Thank you guys for joining us at this 12:30 slot. Awesomely timed. But thank you for showing up. Some of you guys brought lunch. That's good. My name is Rajan Krishna. I work at Microsoft as a senior product manager. And with me, I have
Daniel Kern, work for Flexera Software, also a senior product manager.
And today we're going to be talking about the Desktop Bridge. You might have known it as Project Centennial before. This talk is a little bit more deep dive into how do you bring your existing, you know, desktop applications to the universal Windows platform using this technology. So first of all, like I like to do a little bit of a polling situation at the beginning, so apologies for that. But how many people have you have seen Scott Hanselman's general session yesterday? Okay, fair amount, not everyone. How many of you have done stuff with the Desktop Bridge so far? Couple guys, okay, perfect. So I think this is a good session for you then. The sort of goals of this session are for you to get a good end-to-end view of what the Desktop Bridge means, what it can actually do for you, how do you use it, and really focus on the different stages that you can use it in. So we'll walk through those things. I wanted to set the scene a little bit in terms of, you know, what are we dealing with and why did Microsoft sort of invest in this technology and why did we actually come out with this. Obviously, there's, you know, millions of desktop solutions. You guys probably are, you know, developing desktop solution within your enterprise or within your, you know, ISV. And that is sort of this situation where, you know, there's all this existing investment. And you've heard us talk a lot about Universal Windows Platform on Windows 10. But there's a ton of stuff out there currently that obviously is very important and, you know, in the case of line of business applications, critical sometimes. There are a couple of challenges, though, in terms of the user experience with desktop applications today. So, you know, one of the things is, and you probably have hit this either, you know, as a consumer or professionally, I hope not, but finding the right installer is often a, you know, a challenge. You go to a website, you hope that is actually the right website to get that product from. There's all these different websites that offer up the same installer for this piece of software that you're looking for. And it's very hard for a consumer to really get confidence in, okay, this is the right installer, unless it's directly linked off of your website. But if I would go to, you know, some other website that offer all these different applications, it's hard for me to judge whether or not that is good. So that kind of breaks the trust relationship you guys want to have with your users in terms of getting them the right software that isn't, you know, infected with malware or spyware or those things. Another big problem is obviously, you know, chain installers, getting how often you click next, finish, and then you end up with five different toolbars in your browser and all these different things on your machine that you didn't really want. That is sort of the challenge nowadays as well. So we're you know, that really impacts that user experience. Staying up to date is another, you know, big challenge. You probably have faced this. If you've ever written an installer, you've got to write this auto-update mechanism. You've got to do the patching, checking every day for updates. It's a very complex problem to solve. You have to take into account a lot of things, which isn't really the core of what you're trying to do, right? You're trying to develop this piece of software to be helpful to users, to make them productive, and there's all this infrastructure behind it that you have to maintain because you want to make sure that they are always on the latest and greatest version, that they get the bug fixes, et cetera. But it's a hard thing to actually do. So for users, it's also annoying. I know that my wife, like, she never hits update on anything. So I always have to do it for her, but it is good to get her updated and stay updated. And then lastly, you know, obviously, you know, we all write awesome software that never gets uninstalled, but just in case, there is some software that does get uninstalled. It almost never does that cleanly. So if you take a piece of software, you hit install, it does some stuff, you know, in the registry on the machine, you hit uninstall, that uninstaller has the job to basically remove everything out of the machine again. That never really happens 100%. So there's always stuff left behind for users, and they experience that over time. Their machine gets bogged down, and, you know, they notice all these things happening to their machine, and they don't really know why. And this is one of the most common causes. Like, there's all this residue of old applications on that machine that they want to get rid of, but they can't really as a user. So from a different perspective, there's a couple of solution builder challenges, and I try to come up with a better word, but the US software developers, US distributors, et cetera, there's a couple things in there that actually are challenges from that end. One, obviously I touched on it, maintaining installer technology. You guys have to write all that stuff, maintain it, doing updates, et cetera. I won't go into that. The trustworthy distribution part, obviously it impacts users, but it definitely impacts the people that are writing the software because they are, in fact, trying to get that software to their users in a trustworthy way. Providing auto updates, we touched on that. Again, you have to build all this infrastructure. Monetization and licensing really is one of the things in terms of how do you do that globally? Think about you offering your software up for download if you're an ISV, and this obviously doesn't apply too much if you're writing internal LOB applications. If it does, then good on you. But generally, ISVs, they want to sell their software. They go to their website. They have to build this payment relationship. They have to manage that. Then they have a back end of all this credit card data and all these things that they need to secure. So that is really a tough problem, as well as licensing and making sure that those licenses are used well in terms of piracy and sort of people just copying stuff all over the place. They're really hard problems to solve. From a more technical side, DLL hell, and I put it in quotes, I'm sure y'all know what that means, but making sure that your software on that machine is actually going to work well and it doesn't conflict with any other software that's on the machine, getting all those permutations right, it definitely takes a lot of investment on the software development side to make sure that's all going well. And then lastly, modernization. For those of you who've seen Scott's session yesterday, he talked about all the different ways that we're trying to bring new features and new things for you guys to offer, basically offer value to your customers, be it internal or external. That modernization really is something that you need to consider, and maybe sometimes it is something you want to incorporate in your application, but it's hard to do, or it's not on the exact platform that you're writing it for. If you're writing a WinForms application, it doesn't really necessarily get all the latest and greatest features. But we know that there's a lot of people that write those applications, and rightfully so, right? So it was written a while ago. It was the right tool for the time. There's really no point, and Scott said it well, there's really no point in porting it just for the sake of porting it. You just lose time, and in the end, you end up with the same thing. And that modernization step is really what's holding a lot of people back from providing additional value or effectiveness to their users. So I quickly just want to touch on the Universal Windows Platform, and that's sort of the thing that you've heard us as Microsoft talk a lot about it, and I want to make sure that we are right in the right context here, and it sort of touches a little bit on some of those points that I talked to on the previous slide, like the modernization piece. There's all these innovation things going on, like Windows Hello, Pen and Ink. There's really cool stuff that you guys can use to make your solutions more secure, more effective. But it's hard to incorporate that in sort of this current ecosystem of your applications. It's good that we have that in the Universal Windows Platform, but rewriting the application isn't necessarily always the problem or always the solution. And then obviously on top of that, you might want to expand to all these other devices with your application. If you have an application experience on PC today, you might want to offer some experience on phones or some experience on new devices like HoloLens or Surface Hub within the enterprise that are relevant, but you don't necessarily want to lose all that existing investment. You already did the work once. Why would you have to do it all over again just for the sake of going to a different device? So with that context, I want to briefly introduce you guys to the Desktop Bridge. We previously referenced it as Project Centennial. From now on, you'll see Desktop Bridge as sort of the way to reference it. Main reason is it got released. We don't want to put it out there as a project that is in beta or anything. This is something you can use today. You can use it. Obviously, we're continuing work on it, but this is a technology that we are going to be supporting, and you guys can actually work on solutions with it. And the way this talk is structured is really in two main segments, and you'll see that sort of split out across the demos and the talk sort of as we go along, with that first portion really focusing on deployment and distribution. That couple of those points that we hit on earlier, like the things that you need to do to make that easy, we're going to go over like how does this technology help that. And you'll see the term modern deployment technology a couple times. I'm going to highlight a little bit what that means. But that's sort of the first step, right? Making sure that you can use that to alleviate some of those existing investments that you have to do today in terms of writing an installer, maintaining that, auto updates, all those things. Distribution obviously is another part, and you know, in some cases it makes more sense than others. But the Windows Store and the Windows Store for Business are, you know, good mechanisms to get your applications out there to many, many more users. And it takes care of a lot of other things, things like licensing, things like monetization. That is something that the store can help with from a both consumer side as well as a business perspective. So we'll touch on that a little bit. And then obviously, you know, you've seen the numbers in terms of how much reach we have with Windows, so that could be a compelling reason. And then the second portion really is about the migration of your solutions. So really making sure that you can take advantage of those new capabilities that we are bringing on Windows 10 and moving forward so you can actually go to other devices and new things. And that's sort of the way that you get UWP APIs and you get access to those things in your existing code solution. And you can actually gradually migrate to that solution that goes across devices over time instead of just having to rewrite your application from day zero and throwing away basically your old code. So diving a little bit into the deployment and distribution part, and the existing, like the first step we're really going to touch on is the conversion that we call it. And it's a little bit of an overloaded term, and I think Ken is going to go a little bit more deeper into why that is, but it is really that step of taking your existing installer or existing way of how you do things and bringing that over to use that modern deployment technology. Things that you get, obviously, you know, the updates, the installation experience, and we'll show you a demo of how that actually looks. But after conversion, you are ready to distribute that application directly in the Windows Store, the Windows Store for Business as well, something that you can't really do and with desktop applications today until you do that sort of conversion first step. So modern deployment technology, I touched on it a couple times, and it gives you this streamlined developer experience. You know, no more setup authoring. You don't have to write all these complex installers anymore. That is really something that, you know, you're going to get with that modern deployment technology. Now, obviously, this is all applicable to Windows 10, and especially the Windows 10 anniversary update. And I'm pretty sure not all of you are on Windows 10. So this is definitely something that you're going to get over time, right? It's not a solution for your problems tomorrow, but it's definitely something that you can consider and over time you can adopt, and sort of with your Windows 10 user base growing, hopefully over time, you can offer that functionality to those Windows 10 users. Again, you know, only trusted applications are able to install, so every one of these things is signed. You actually see up there, there's a publisher there. Users can be sure that that thing is signed by you as a developer, and you make sure that that is a trusted installer. And it's optimized for, you know, updates and downloads. Some of these things apply to the store, some of these things apply broader, but for instance, if you distribute your application to the store will actually fetch the bits and pieces of your installer that it needs for that specific case. So let's say your application supports multiple languages, you know, which in probably a lot of cases applications do. The store will actually push down the languages and the things that are required for that user in that specific moment in time. It will not download the whole thing and sort of start the installation then, disregarding half of it. You can actually just, you know, push down the bits that you need. In terms of updates, same thing. If just one one DLL change in your update and your entire application is hundreds of megabytes, it will actually push down that one DLL change and not do an entire update that takes away a lot of bandwidth and a lot of time to do that. So there's a couple of benefits there that also apply to sideloading, like the update mechanism. If you apply that patch, obviously it's not going to just download that bit, but that patching automatically happens for you. So you don't have to take care of how do I actually apply this update. From a user experience perspective, it also provides this great user experience. So users can actually install applications. They no longer need, you know, elevation. They don't need administrator rights to install these applications. They don't get the user account control prompt to click yes or enter their, you know, administrator information. This is really a thing that is safe for users to do. And because of the way we set it up, and hopefully as the talk moves along, you'll see some of those bits and pieces, we want to make sure that the user can confidently install this application. If it's not right for them, uninstall it, and nothing will be left behind on that machine. And then lastly, obviously, it's ready for the enterprise. It uses the same app packaging format that universal Windows platform applications do. So it's this .appx file, and this application package is supported by MDM solutions today, and you can do side loading and all these things that you are used to in a business. You don't have to use our store if you don't want to or don't need to. So that package really gives you that benefit instead of without you having to do all those public-facing things that you might not want to do with your line of business applications, for instance. And then jumping a little bit to the sort of second piece of it, this is just sort of an introduction of both of those things. Once you are converted and you are in this new world of getting that application package, that is really when you can start moving forward and start modernizing and start adding these things into your application. So we split it up into sort of three phases of how you should approach this. And the first phase is the enhance phase, we call it, and that is really adding UWP APIs into your existing code base. So you have your WinForms application and you want to add push notifications, for instance. You can directly add those APIs into your code without having to migrate over to a new app model or rewrite your code as is. And that's sort of the first kind of less time-consuming step that you can then take. And the second phase, if my clicker works, there you go. The second phase is really this extension phase. And that is when you add a UWP app component, and again, we'll go over this in demos, but you add a UWP app component to your package, so you effectively have your existing WinForms or WPF app, and you have this UWP app, but because they are in the same package, they can actually communicate with one another. They can launch each other, et cetera, so they can work together while you have a large piece of functionality still in your WinForms application, for instance. You can add a touch-friendly user interface or an optimized user interface. You can start using the new things that we're doing with pen and ink while still having your functionality in the back end that you didn't have to rewrite. And over time, sort of that process continues in these two phases, and you move more and more code over to the UWP app over time. And this is really that gradual path that we're enabling with this technology, is that you can do this at your own pace where it makes sense for you. Until at the end, obviously, you end up with this only the UWP app inside of that package, at which point you can actually go forward and you can go to all these other devices. Up until that point, I do want to make that note, up until that point, your application still runs only on PCs because it has that desktop component. Now, once you go into that extend and migrate phase, you may choose to split that out. Maybe on the phone, you want to offer that UWP app experience because it has some functionality there that can be useful, but you cannot rely on that desktop component being there. That will only light up on PCs at that point. So that was a quick introduction. I'm actually going to hand it over to Ken to talk a little bit about the conversion, deployment, distribution part of it. Oh, I actually do. Yes, sorry about that. I'm not going to hand it over yet. So I just quickly, sort of visualizing what it is, we're going to start with an existing desktop application. Again, that can be anything. It can have an installer or no. If you don't have an installer, you can manually package it. It's an easy method that you can use. Today, we're going to do a demo with an actual installer, and Ken obviously is going to demo how you do that with InstallShield. And then, the immediate benefits of converting that app, like I mentioned, is all these things, and that's sort of the step one that we're going to go through now.
Thank you. And kicking in?
There it goes.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting us here today. It's been great working with you, the whole team, the developers out there. We've had a great relationship, and it's been exciting to be part of the solution and help. Looking forward to bringing our customers into this technology as well. So, started that. But you're right, I do want to go after the word conversion first, just to kind of bring that up. You mentioned that earlier. So when I hear the word conversion, I think of a kind of a one-time process. I'm going from A to B, and that's the end. We look at the way you build software as being a continuous process. Many of you probably are on a continuous build cycle. You've got constant updates. You may have a daily build process or even faster with many applications. And you're still going to be supporting multiple environments. You're out there with the Windows 10, the anniversary update, which is what we're focusing on here with this technology. But you still need to support your applications, either in your enterprise or with customers on other operating systems. So those were some of the challenges that we were looking at and hearing from customers, some of the questions that came up as the whole desktop bridge was being raised that we wanted to go after first. So one of the capabilities we've added to Install Shield in our latest release is we'll start testing your applications. So you can take an existing project, something you're already working on with Install Shield today, to build your installations. And we'll look at that and compare it to see if it's going to meet kind of the limitations and the capabilities that come with the desktop bridge. And there's several different scenarios we're looking at. You know, the first column there is talking about if your end goal is to get to a pure UWP app. We're going to look at things a little different. Well, if we're primarily talking today about the desktop bridge, or even the store, because there's things that the desktop bridge can do, the UWP app package can do, but there's policies that to get into the Windows Store that may not match with those. So we do test those differently, look at the app from those two different angles. We're not getting into it today, but there's a related similar technology called Windows Server Applications for doing similar installations on the server side and for Windows Nano. If you've got questions about that, we can talk about that offline. All right. So we're going through this, helping you with some examples up here. We're looking at, let's see what I've got on the board, applications with multiple shortcuts. Again, if you're going into the store, one of the store policies is one shortcut, one launching entry point for the application. So if you had multiple shortcuts today in your MSI, that would be a blocker to get into the Windows Store. So we're looking for that kind of information. Or applications that use COM, that's a current limitation in the desktop scenario. The app can internally use COM, but it can't interface with external applications through COM if you're using the desktop bridge. So we're looking for that. We're proactively finding that, raising that to your attention, so you understand some of the limitations you may run into in this, or you can start working with your developers to address those limitations before you move forward. So once we've done that, we've addressed any challenges you may have encountered, or you may be green across the board, the next step is we want to help you build that application. So one project, build and design your installation once, but we're going to get multiple outputs. We'll continue to build your traditional Windows installer package, but we'll simultaneously start building the UWP app package in the .appx format. So you get two outputs. Again, this is for that continuous build process, because you still need to support this wide range of customers and multiple operating systems. So your app's going to need to be out there in many different ways. And with that, you could then use that the UWP app package. There's really two scenarios there as well. You can use that to prepare for the Windows Store and upload into the store, or you can still continue to give that to your customers directly. Same way you might host an application today on your website as a download, you can do that with the UWP app packages. So rather than downloading a setup exe or an install.msi, you can now have your application.appx that they can download, double-click to install on their devices. So we're going to build all this for you. Now, some of the challenges, now you brought up the concept of kind of these bundles or suites or the chained events. And yeah, sometimes those do get abused for things like the browser toolbars, get asked to install antivirus tools we may or may not want. You get that a lot. Many developers do use this intentionally to really help optimize the way they design their installations. So we talk about modular development a lot in the installation business. Where if you have a component or a runtime that's used across multiple applications, you may give it its own installer and then bundle it or suite it together with each of the solutions that need it. So we see this as a very common practice used by developers. But as brought up, that's really going to be a limitation as you go into the store. You can only have a single file install. You can't have this bundle of different things that accomplishes your larger application. So we want to help you flatten that out, and we do that with two different methods. The first one, just highlighting real quick, is we've added an ability to merge multiple UWP app packages all into one. So whether you're building that UWP app package with Install Shield, with MakeAppX, with the desktop app converter, you can have all these different components, these different .appx files built through any different tool, and at our build time, we'll merge those all together into one so that you're now compatible and friendly to upload into the store. We've got that limitation of one appx. You can still continue to develop in a modular way, but build in a single file. The other way we're approaching that is some people still want that bootstrapper. So the last slide, that's about getting into the store. Here we're talking about if you want to host it still on your web page, but you still have that complex install, you still have that modular development you want to use. Install Shield has a newer a bootstrapper engine we refer to as the Suite engine that you can bundle these complex apps together. So we can do that to bring in multiple X packages and compile them as a setup EXE. So you're still going to have a setup EXE in the store or on your web page for customers to download, not in the store. Setup EXEs don't go in the store. On your web page, you can have that setup EXE, single file download, and it can chain together all the different components, runtimes, dependencies, pieces of your application that you want to bring together. And we can do that also on demand. So it can be a stub file, just a small download for your customers initially. We'll look on their device, figure out they may already have the runtime already installed, or if it's a Windows 7 device, then we'll download MSI components. If a Windows 10 anniversary update device, we'll download .appx components. So it's very dynamic, looks at the user's device, downloads exactly only what they need in the right formats. So you can still build those custom bootstrappers. And with that, you can then regain control of that user experience. When you double-click the .appx files, that's going to be a standard user experience. There's no option to customize the look and feel other than the logo and the product name. They're all going to look exactly the same. But if you want that, if your marketing team likes banners and display ads and interact with the customers, introduce the application during installation, that's another opportunity where these bootstrappers, our suite engine, can be real powerful. So let me dive into a demo environment here. If you want to swap me over, I'm going to wake this up. So I've got the latest version of Install Shield here on the screen, and it opens up here to that validation, those testing I was talking about earlier. In this case, I'm green across the board for the desktop platforms we were looking at, and this is the same application that you're going to see here in a minute from Rajan's, the health clinic application. So we've tested it, we've looked for it. Now, the reason some things are showing up are the server scenario, Nano in particular. Nano doesn't have a desktop, so anything around using shortcuts won't work in that environment. Nano's also doesn't, part of keeping that small footprint, it doesn't support the WoW 64 subsystem. It's a pure 64-bit environment. So when we see 32-bit files, we're going to flag that, bring it to your attention, so you're aware of that in that case. But really, in this case, for desktop use, we are totally green. And we've really made this simple. It's under the release settings, where you define the way Install Shield is going to build your application. We can just say, yes, we want to build a UWP app package. And that's it. Very simple. We can do more if we want to, but at that point, we are ready to build. So some things we can do, some extra steps in here, would be, if you were going after that server environment, we could enable those extensions here. You talked about some of the dependencies that if wanted to get some things dynamically from the store, let me give you an example there. So if you require like the Visual C runtimes, there's something called a framework package where we can download those straight from the Windows Store directly. So we can establish that, call that out in the package manifest so it knows what it needs and we'll grab it at install time. And then that same concept we talked about merging. So this is my primary AppX package, my UWP app package. But if I had others I wanted to merge together, I'd be able to browse for those and bring them in at this time. Let's see. Now, the one thing you also raised earlier was the need to digitally sign installations. So in the Windows installer world, you should. It's a best practice. We've always recommended it. But it's not required. Once you go into UWP app packages, it is a requirement that everything is digitally signed. So make sure you've brought that in if you haven't yet. You can do that here through Install Shield. We'll sign it for you as we build. Or if you already have a signing process built into your build engine, that's fine too, as long as it gets signed before you deliver to customers. So from there, just go ahead and build this. It runs real fast. And this is now building both a Windows installer installation and a UWP app package. So we get both, one build process. You can do that here from the IDE like I'm doing, or we have a standalone build engine you can run on your build server and just tie it into your build process. So this will run as part of your standard processes. All right, there we go. And it links me straight out there. To do this, the sideloading has to be enabled on the end user device. In the enterprise environment, that's something you can easily control through group policy. So make sure that's been turned on. But at that point, the application launches. This is that standard experience I was describing, that all UWP app packages that go through this manual install will look exactly the same. What you see is that does not include a next button. You get the install button, that's it. So there's no custom of that install. There's no banners or commercials or advertisements. There's no custom actions in there. You can't turn features on or off. You get the whole thing all at once every time. You get that progress bar, and that is it. And it immediately gives you a launch button. So that app opens right up. Now, the nice thing on these, let me open here on the menu. We can pin these to the start screen. And again, launch the application. Now, you talked also about that clean user experience for the uninstall. And that's also been made very simple. No longer having to dig into the control panel, find the application. The end users that have this software installed this way, they can simply right-click, uninstall the app, and it instantly disappears. Pulled out immediately. No extra wizards, no dialogues, it's just gone. So, nice and simple. Now, let me close that. Now, the other example we talked about was that the bootstrapper scenario. So let me switch there for a minute. And this is what we call the Install Shield Suite projects. And in here, we can add multiple packages. So I've added two different AppXs. I've got just a standard runtime that my app needed, and the health check. But you could add several other things in here. It can call other MSIs. It can call patches. It can call, what do we have in here? If you're doing anything with server applications, we can bring a web deploy apps. We can call out, run PowerShell scripts. We can do DISM commands to kind of install Windows roles and features. So if it's, again, a web app, we can install IIS as part of the bootstrapper. So we've got a lot of power through this engine to really customize that experience. With those in place, let me get that expanded back out. This one's pretty straightforward. I'm just going to go ahead and run it. And now we're in a scenario where you're in control of the wizard. You can expose this, you can customize the look and feel of the bootstrapper, and you can tie that into license agreements or whatever you want to display to your customer for that more traditional experience. And it's doing the complex things behind the scenes, where it's installing multiple components, it's doing things to the machine, it can run scripts, it can meet your complex applications, complex needs if you need to go there. So all that's available. So just a quick recap, we've talked about testing your applications, making sure they're compatible with the needs, having that information up front so you can interact with your developers, address that early in the process. We have looked at building both of these simultaneously, have that MSI for your Windows 7, your Windows 8 user base, having the UWP app package for your Windows 10 customers, and then a couple different ways of kind of flattening out your installation, being able to handle these complex modular apps. You can bring it all into a single AppX to get it ready for the store, or you can leverage these bootstrappers to handle a more complex installation if you're going to deliver straight to your customers through your website. So that'll turn it back over to you, but appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Ken. A couple things I want to highlight there is you've seen the sort of the initial experience, and it's great to have, you know, partners like Flexera to have this experience. If you're using Install Shield before, you can continue to use that in your environment today. One of the cool things I think is in Install Shield is that first compatibility sort of check. There are a couple things that you need to be aware of, and I'll show you where you can find those things. But there are a couple things you need to be aware of, as you know, in terms of support. And this really makes it a developer-focused technology. This is really a way where if you do the conversion step, it is very likely that you will have to make some small code changes to make sure that you fit in this new sort of runtime deployment model that we have. Now, granted, those changes won't be huge, but it's great to have tools that will actually go through those things and show you, okay, you know, this is some of the stuff that you need to address before moving forward. Now, diving a little bit into how does that work, right? So, in terms of the deployment model, as mentioned, it uses that modern deployment stack. It has extensions for things where you want to call out native Windows functionality. Let's say you want to have a startup task in your application where every time the user logs on, you want some code to run. We have extensions in that framework, so you can actually call those things out, and Windows will manage that lifecycle. The cool thing about those is it is managed by Windows, so you no longer have to create registry entries or all these fancy things on the machine to make sure that happens. Windows will manage that. At installation, it will register with Windows. At an installation, it will actually remove that registration. So again, it will leave a clean sort of machine there. And then, like I said, you know, solving that DLL hell and registry bloat, there's a couple things that we do in a deployment system, and that's sort of why you need to make sure that you are, you know, able to make some changes to the code if necessary. There is some redirection of the file system and the registry going on to make sure that we can actually capture all those changes and keep it clean. Taking the registry as an example, there is a registry.dat file that gets deployed with your application. The desktop app converter or, you know, the other tooling that you're going to use to create that package, that is actually going to capture all those changes you make to the registry. It's going to put that in that file. So as soon as your application tries to read from the registry, the file and the actual registry get merged, so your application is none the wiser. Like, the registry is there, all the things that it expects is there, but as soon as you start writing to the registry, it writes only to the file. So the actual registry on the machine keeps clean. If you uninstall the application, the registry file gets wiped, and everything is clean on that machine. So there's a couple things there that we do. App data, I'm going to show you shortly. That folder gets moved as well. But to your application, it's transparent. You will actually get the right folder location. And then obviously, you know, the same code, if you run this conversion step or, you know, the initial step of that process, that same code will continue to run. So if you're using things like InstallShield, you can still output that existing MSI file and have that new Windows 10 deployment mechanism all at the same time while, you know, servicing the right users with the right tool. So at this point, in, you know, once you have the conversion, you have that modern installation, you can actually be activated via tiles, like Ken actually showed you. You can be activated via file types and URI protocols and things like that you would expect for it to happen. URI protocols is actually a new cool feature that you can then use in your application. You can just have a URL and have it pop inside of your application instead of just a web URL. And your application has this app identity. So that package comes with an app identity. And the app identity, you can really view it as sort of a unique name of your application system-wide. What? Oh. I was confused there. Someone else started talking. So the app identity really gives you a way to access all the different UWP APIs that exist. For example, if you want to do push notifications, like I said earlier, you need that app identity. That API expects there to be an app identity for it to work. Once you do the conversion process, you actually have that. So let me touch quickly on distribution, and then we can sort of move into the actual code demos on how this works in Visual Studio to move your application forward. And I want to make sure that I highlight the fact that obviously in the store, you can distribute your application at this point. If you want to do this, obviously it's our job as Microsoft to make sure that users get the, you know, trusted good experience in the store all the time. Technically any desktop application can be converted over or moved over into this app package format, but not necessarily all the applications or all the exes that are out there in the world. We want to be able to surface to users in the store. I'm sure you're getting what I'm alluding at. So we do have a process for you to let us know if you want to go to the store. We follow up with you, we make sure we have a chat, and we sort of move you through that process. So that is a link that you can actually follow. And again, you'll have this deck, so you'll have those links. Quickly highlighting a couple things and making sure that you guys are aware of the stuff that we're doing. Actually, a couple weeks ago, we launched the first set of applications that are available in the store. So if you go to the Windows Store today, you will find things like this Movie Edit Pro software from Magic Software. And this really is a rich, full-feature Windows application. If Magic were to decide to move this over to UWP, it will probably be a multi-year process. And I'm sure you have those applications in your organizations today, these huge applications that really function well and do the job. But you might want to simplify the distribution, or you want to distribute it through the Windows Store for Business. This really gives you that opportunity. Again, Evernote is another example, if my clicker will work. Evernote is another example that is in the store today, and their desktop application actually can be pulled down from the store. It gives them that sort of flexibility in terms of installation, and it simplifies things for them. And they actually integrated live tiles and push notifications in their application as well. So they did that sort of modernization step of their existing software. So moving on to how do you actually do that? So you know, at this point, we have this thing. We want to enhance it with these UWP APIs to have, you know, new functionality in our application. And I'm going to show you the health clinic application, the WPF app, and really show you how you actually add new APIs into that. So let me switch over this cable really quick. And then move into number 8. All right, so I have, let me show this one. So this is the health clinic solution. You may have seen it yesterday. Scott showed you what it basically looks like. It's a solution that has a portable class library with the core logic of the application, and then it has this desktop project. So one of the interesting things that we did here is we added the functionality in here to do push notifications. So if I scroll down, you will actually see that I'm calling the push notification channel manager. Now, this is probably not an API you've seen in .NET and WinForms because it doesn't exist in .NET and WinForms. This is really one of the UWP APIs that you're able to bring in. So the way that this works is you actually add a reference to the sort of the UWP API surface. And I'll point you to the documentation where this actually is. It lives in program files, Windows kits, et cetera, a long, complex path. But you see that windows.winmd file at the end, that is really the metadata file that you can reference and start adding these UWP APIs. There's modular versions of it as well if you just need smaller files, but this is generally the one that you want to sort of add those APIs in there. As soon as you do, these things light up, and you can actually start calling these APIs. And because we're going to package that application up into this application package that has app identity, this API will actually successfully execute. You could, you know, definitely start adding that Windows WinMD file to your existing desktop project and try to run it. With a lot of UWP APIs, that works, but the ones that require package identity or app identity, that you really need that packaging step to happen. Another example that we have put in this solution is actually putting in push notification or live tiles. So if I go in here and scroll down a little bit, you will actually see that once I load the data from the server side, I get a list of appointments. You've seen the application just a minute ago. But I want to make sure that my next appointment is always in the live tile. So if I glance on the live tile as sort of the person behind that application, I don't always have to have the application open, get it refreshing, et cetera. I can use that live tile to feed me new information that's relevant to me at that time without having to go into that application. And again, you see these examples, and it's sort of this notion of all the UWP APIs that you could use, you can actually start adding them into here. So running this, building this application actually gives me a build output. And basically two things need to happen in here. You will need to add a appx manifest file. And that is really the manifest file that's descriptive of, you know, what is this application package about, what is the executable name that I need to launch, et cetera. If I open up that manifest file, you can see that I have a couple things in here. So again, like I said, I have this identity, and this identity is unique. So in this case, I actually registered this application with the store. The store gave me a package identity that's unique across the store, so I can do things like push notifications. In here, I have the target device family, which is Windows Desktop. Again, like I mentioned, at this stage, your application just runs as it did before, so it's just going to run on Windows Desktops. And then I declare this capability called run full trust. And that is really the capability that we require in this manifest to make sure that the system knows you have this desktop application that's going to run, right? So UWP apps in general, they're, you know, well isolated. They don't really get a lot of things that they can do on the system. But this is a desktop application like you're used to doing it today. We didn't want to restrict that experience for you, so you would have to do a lot of code changes to make this work in the first place. But so this declares in the system that this is an application that requires all these functionalities on the system. And then in here, you can see that the executable name is set up to myhealth.client.desktop.exe, which is just a plain application that was the WPF app. So actually running through this, you will see that I can, I'll end up with an application package if I were to package this project, and that is sort of this experience. You've seen that. But if you want to do development and you're, you know, actively working on this application, you need to make some changes, you don't really want to do that conversion or that building step and installation step every time. So what you can actually do is you can take the build output that you have here. So I have this debug folder. And because the manifest is here and all the things that I need for this application is here, I can actually go into PowerShell and blow this up a little bit and execute this command. So add apex package. I give it the register flag, which basically says register the application with this manifest. So again, I'm not packaging it up anything. I don't have this installation experience. I'm just registering this application. And once I execute that, it will actually register that app with Windows. So right now, I registered the app, and I can find it here, which is healthclinic.biz. I can actually pin the tile, everything, launch it, it will launch. The cool thing now, though, is that every time I build this application, I make changes to it, it is still registered in that location. So I can just continuously build and execute and run the app without having to do that installation experience every time. This is really a developer productivity thing that we have in the system. This works with any UWP app, by the way. If you've ever done Universal Windows Platform app development, you don't have to build and deploy every time. You can use this registration to really register that folder where everything resides. But as you can see here, I can actually see that the live tile has updated with the next appointment that is there. And that is really that capability that gives me this access to all these new UWP APIs that are in that system. So let me close this up. So moving back to these slides. So you've seen that sort of enhanced phase. How do I add UWP APIs to the existing code base? You've seen I didn't really add any new components. It was still my WPF app, just added new APIs in there. But what if we want to take that one step further? And this is really that sort of extend phase that we talked about, is I want to get more access to these UWP API services. Things that I obviously can't do in the previous step is anything UI related. If I want to have a modern XAML touch-friendly UI, if I want to use the new binding mechanisms as a developer that we have there, or I want to offer this really easy inking platform to my users, that's really not something I'm going to get because it requires this application UI model that the Universal Windows Platform offers. So for those specific cases, you can have this extend phase and basically package up a UWP app with your existing desktop application. And you have this communication flow basically that can go back and forth between them. And you can see that UWP app inside of it, that runs in the app container, as we call it. That is the thing that I alluded to previously, is that it is restricted on what it can do on a machine, and if you want to have access to things like the photo library or the camera or the Bluetooth devices, you need to register those capabilities with it so users are aware of what that application actually does. But that runs in the app container context. It can call out to the full trust process or the desktop process that we have under in the same package. So again, the current code, it just stays in the desktop process. The UWP app, it goes into the app container process, but they can activate one another. So if you do have your desktop process as the leading process in that case, and you want to call into the app container process, the UWP app portion of it, it can actually activate that thing. Other way around, same thing works. So if you have your UWP app and you want to call the functionality that is in your desktop process, the activation can go that way as well. Now, there's a communication channel. It is using app services. If you've never heard about app services, that is a thing that we have in UWP that is basically a communication channel between applications. So your app can register an app service, and that app service then silently is is registered on the machine by Windows. And it can be called by all these different applications. You can even expose these app services to other applications if you want. let's say you have a login scenario with your, you know, on your in your enterprise, you could create this app service that handles that functionality, and all these different applications could call into this one app service, so you don't have to rewrite that functionality every time. In this case, how that works is the app service is between, you know, the app container process and the desktop process. So if you want to pass some functionality back to the desktop process saying, okay, fetch me this data, or, you know, put this thing on the system, you could pass that message over to the desktop process. It will actually execute and run and do all the things that it needs to, and it can pass information back saying, okay, you know, this was successful, or here's the data that you requested. So let's jump into a demo of how that actually looks. So let me close this up. So here I have a slightly different application. And that was the wrong button. So in here, I have a different project. It has three, a different solution, I mean. It has three projects inside of it. So it has a background task. This is one of the things where you would need to do this sort of extension, because background tasks are something you can define in the UWP app world. Think, you know, every 15 minutes I want to execute this type of functionality, that sort of a thing. I have the desktop app, which is a simple desktop application, and I'll walk you through the code in just a second. And I have the UWP app that is actually the thing that is going to launch initially. So that is my main entry point into the application. Again, it doesn't have to be. It could be the other way around. In this case, my UWP app is leading, so to speak, and it can actually call into the desktop application. So opening up the background task, I'm just going to quickly show you it. What it does is, this is the standard way of defining a background task in the Universal Windows platform. I'm not going to go through all these APIs, but basically what it does is it has a function that says show toast. So this can actually pop up a notification, a local notification on a schedule. So this background task, I will register it with the system, and on a schedule, it will give me these notifications saying, you know, maybe, hey, your next appointment is coming up, or things like that. That is a local service that's actually going to run as a background task. Then, if my mouse would work. All right, there we go. So in the desktop application, what actually is happening in here, and as you can see, if I zoom in, this thing is actually doing things in the registry. Obviously, this is not something, we don't have registry APIs in the Universal Windows App platform, and, you know, for good reason, like I explained earlier, you want to use the alternatives that we have. We have a way for you to do local application data. You can do that. You can roam that data all over the place. There's alternatives that you can use that don't really affect that system in a permanent way. But in this case, I have this existing application that writes some things to the registry, and I want to reuse that functionality. I don't, you know, I'm not necessarily ready to rewrite that functionality to use new APIs or to do different things. But I do want to modernize my user interface in this case. So in this case, my desktop application, it just does creation of a registry key if it doesn't exist. My app is a very simple application. I can set my availability status in this app, so I can say I'm available or I'm busy, and it actually stores that information into the registry. If you go down, you will actually see here that I do register that app service. Like I said, this is a thing that is registered in the application as a communication channel between my UWP app and my desktop app. So this is a standard app service registration that I do. I open the connection. This thing won't remain open the entire time, so as soon as I make a call to that app service, it will actually start up and it will actually, you know, execute whatever functionality is going to need to be executed. As you can see, it uses a thing called a value set, which is basically just a key value pair. But this is the structure that is used to pass messages back and forth. Now, this is limited in terms of what it can pass along in one message. So you will have to chunk up data if you want to, you know, send more data over back and forth. But this is an in structure that we're actually going to use. And in this case, I'm going to add a, you know, current status as an initial status. I'm going to add that as a value set and pass that along to my UWP application. Again, my UWP application is the user interface, so at launch, I want to know what my status is, but that status is in the registry. So I'm immediately asking the desktop application, you know, pull that information from a registry, return my current status so I can actually use it in the user interface. And obviously, there's a method to close that service as well if I need to. Now, moving into the UWP app portion, going into the app.xaml.cs, which is the basic entry point of this application, you can see I also do registration of the app service. Again, here I have a method that says request received. So if I jump over there, you will see I just fetched a thing. If it contains the key current status, I fetched the current status and I actually put that into the user interface. And in the main page, what I do is I have, let me show you the XAML first. So in the main page, what this looks like, give the designer a second. Very simple page. I have a status drop down here that just shows me my current status. I can change it and sort of pass that message back to the desktop application portion. Again, this is default XAML that we have in here, nothing really fancy. There's a color animation here to show you guys, you know, cool animations, because who doesn't love animations? But then in the code is where the important stuff happens. First of all, I'm registering that background task. Remember, I do have that background task that does the time trigger. So every 15 minutes, I'm going to get a toast notification saying what the current status is. And then in here, if I skip over to that, you will actually see that I am using this API to launch the full trust process. Again, like I explained, the UWP app starts up, but I want to get the status, so I want to make sure that the full trust process launches, it can actually execute, it registers the app service, I send the message back, and I get the data back. So this is an API you can use, and you need a what we call extension SDK to the Universal Windows Platform. So if you go into References, Add Reference, and you go to Universal Windows Platform Extensions, you will actually see that there's a number of extension SDKs here, as we call them. So there's the desktop extensions, there's the IoT extensions, the mobile extensions, et cetera. And these extensions really are the specific APIs that we make available for these specific devices. Again, the Universal Windows Platform, the name says it, it is universal, but on desktop, you may have a couple APIs that you don't have on mobile, for instance, like this full trust process launcher. Same thing on IoT, you will probably have a lot of things to interface with devices over those buses that don't really apply to any of these other devices. So make sure you are referencing the desktop extensions if you want to run this full trust process launcher API. And then lastly, if I actually change the selection in the combo box, I'm going to, first of all, create a value set. That value set, I'm going to add that value for status update. And if the connection actually exists on the machine, I'm going to send that message. Now, that message has the opportunity to immediately return a response, and that response is what I'm going to use to, you know, for instance, in this case, set up a live tile. And that live tile will actually show me the status as well. Again, simple scenario, but you kind of get the gist of how things flow back and forth between these applications. So again, executing this thing, I take the build output that I have, I register that with the system. So I do add apex package dot dash register. I put in this and the apex manifest. Hit enter. It registers the application with the system. I go down here where I now have my desktop app, step 4. Again, I don't have a live tile for this or a tile image, but I could put that in there. If I launch it, it will actually create the register key for me. And again, important to know, because this is now running in the context of the app package, this is not writing to the actual registry. It writes to that data file. So I keep the system clean, and I don't actually mess up anything in the registry. You see the fancy animation, by the way. No applause necessary. But so I can change this to do not disturb and actually see that the live tile will update with that status in there. And because this information is stored in the registry, next time I open the application, it will again ask for that for the in the desktop process, give that back to my UWP app. So this is sort of how that flow back and forth works with the app service. All right, so jumping back to these slides. So at this point, you really have the basic core components of how you would take this forward. And a lot of the next phases is just going to be iteration over this, over time, you know, moving your code to the UWP app portion, making sure you don't call those APIs anymore that you don't need to call in sort of desktop world. In this case, you would move over that API to use the local settings, APIs, et cetera. You can add more APIs if you want to. You can, you know, add in more app services or background tasks or triggers. There's some cool functionality that we have in the Universal Windows platform that is now all accessible to you as an application, because you can use that either directly in your existing code or in the UWP app portion of it. So you can really benefit of both worlds while you, you know, obviously continuously migrate to your UI, to XAML, and to the Universal Windows platform if you do plan on, you know, exposing that functionality on other devices. This clicker is funny. So, like I said, migration over time, moving everything in there, and you will end up with this stage where you would just have the UWP app inside of the app package, so you could actually distribute that thing. So getting started, I want to highlight a couple things, because I, you know, obviously this has been pretty quickly, and I have a lot of things that have been pre-staged. I want to make sure you guys have the right information to, you know, get started on how you use this. So first of all, obviously, you know, if you want to use Install Shield, if you're using it today, go to the website. They now have the support for outputting those UWP app packages directly. If you want to get any information about the desktop bridge and you want to get started, you actually go to this page. Again, I will have links in the deck, and I will point you to a place where to get more information. But this is sort of the landing page where you will find all the new information that we have. There's a quick, a little over a minute video there if you want to show other people, like, this is sort of the gist of it. That's a quick video that you can show, and if you scroll down, you will actually have some more in-depth information in here. I'll make sure that this talk actually comes on this site as well. And there's a way for you to provide feedback, either getting help on the forums, or giving us feedback about, you know, features that you need, things that aren't in the product today necessarily, or things that you would like to see in the future. You can actually give us feedback on user voice, and give you, you know, we're actively monitoring sort of what happens on user voice to see how we can better service you guys with this product. I want to quickly show you the page that you can use to let us know that you're ready to submit to the Windows Store. So if you do want to do that, this is sort of the page that you do that with. There's a quick form that we ask you to fill in to sort of highlight what your application is about and what you want to do. Jumping into the documentation, there's a couple interesting things I want to call out. So first of all, this is the main documentation page that you get. In here, you will have this prepare your desktop app for conversion. And this is really, you know, it sort of corresponds with the list that Install Shield has, the checks that they do automatically. But this is the list where you really have to monitor, okay, is my application, you know, in a good state right now to do the actual conversion? Again, like I said, you will have to make some changes necessary that, you know, in this case, first example, if your application targets a previous version of .NET, you will have to update to 4.6.1 to make sure that you are compatible with using the desktop bridge. So there's a couple things in here. Couple APIs, obviously things like, you know, if you're using the HKLM registry hive, the local machine, you can obviously totally use that. It'll just go into your file, your registry file. Other applications don't have that view to your registry file. So if you want to make system-wide changes, you can write to HKLM, but no other application is going to see those changes. So make sure you're aware of that fact, and you sort of plan accordingly on how you would change that. So there's a couple things in here that'll actually guide you through that. Now, actually moving forward, starting the conversion process, you will see here the different options that you would have to do that conversion process. We have a tool called the Desktop App Converter. It is actually in the Windows Store itself, so you can use that thing from the store to convert your app to go to the store. It's very meta. But there's other options to do that, obviously. So if you want to do manual conversion, if you just have an application that is a simple .exe file with maybe some configuration files, you might not have this complex installer today. You can actually do a manual packaging, and it's a very easy process. You create the manifest, you run a make apex command, and we'll actually output that package for you. And then obviously third-party installers. So again, Install Shield is one of the options, but we do have other partners, Wix by FireGiant, and Advanced Installer by Kfeander. They actually support this today as well. So if you're using any of these tools, you can continue to use that sort of workflow to go and move forward. Two more things I want to call out. The converted desktop app extensions, like I mentioned, there's a couple things in the sort of UWP app world that don't exist necessarily that you might want. One of the things is startup tasks. So if you want to, like I mentioned, maybe you, every time you run the application, when the user logs on, you put an icon in the system tray. We actually have an application in the store right now that does that, Ear Trumpet. I'm not sure if you heard of it. It's a very cool like volume monitoring tool for Windows. But it does put an icon in the system tray every time I log on. You can use these extensions to really get that functionality while it's managed by Windows. So if I uninstall it, this thing will no longer exist, but nothing is in my registry, for instance. Again, this is startup task is one example. App execution alias is another good example. If you want to go into the run window or into CMD and you want to start your application with some alias, this is actually a registration that you can do. Previously, you would have to, you know, register your path into the global path variable that's in Windows and all these complex things, and that path variable would end up being this big. That no longer is necessary. You can use this app extension to basically declare that registration. So definitely check out this site, and these are things that obviously now apply to the desktop bridge, but over time we're looking to, you know, bring these things to the Universal OneS platform so more applications can actually use this. And then lastly, I want to give you a quick sort of glimpse of what is to come. If you are using VS 15 in the preview version, not 2015, 15, great naming. If you're using Visual Studio VNext today, you can actually install an extension that will give you debug experience out of the box with Visual Studio using the Desktop Bridge applications. Right now you've seen, like, I have to go into PowerShell, I have to register an application. It gets registered with Windows, but I can't really hit F5 because I need to hit the tile to activate the application. If I want to debug, I can attach the debugger today, but it's sort of this manual process. So what this Visual Studio extension actually does is it gives you a project to add to your solution. So you can add this desktop to UWP packaging project solution. And if you just put that as the startup project, it will launch the application package for you and attach the debugger directly. So you can actually start debugging right from Visual Studio. So look for that in the next version of Visual Studio and how that sort of works. But that is a cool thing of how to, again, improve the developer workflow there. All right. So in summary, the desktop bridge, again, you start with your existing installer or your files. What you do is you convert that solution using the desktop app converter manually or installer technology. You get this UWP app package with the manifest inside of it. From then on, you test and make sure that functionality corresponds to what you expected, so no changes or any changes that you might need to make, you actually catch up front. You can update that thing, you can distribute, and that is sort of the cycle that you're then in. And then you can, from there on, extend and enhance that functionality with Universal Windows Platform APIs to go to other devices as well. So next steps, these are a couple links down there. Make sure you let us know if you are using this, like what do you think about it? I'll be here for a few minutes, but I'll be down in the booth as well at in Building B. And Ken, I'm sure he'll join me right after the session to sort of talk to you about things that we have there. There are a couple related sessions I want to quickly call out for if you're interested in this sort of notion of bringing your applications to the Universal Windows platform. I'm not going to go through this entire list, but there are related sessions that we have here today. Tomorrow, there's some things about the store if you're interested in that story. And on Friday, we have some sessions on deployment. Kyle is actually going to present there on how you distribute these applications in an enterprise using either the Windows Store for Business or sideloading. So if you're interested in that story, definitely check that out. There's a couple of theater sessions down in the Windows booth in Building B. So those are 20-minute sessions where you can sort of quickly get up to speed of things. And again, like I said, you can come down to us come down to the showcase area. That little box there is where we are. So it's in the developer area. It's not in the Windows platform and devices area. So make sure you are aware of where it is. And if you actually hit this URL, you can fill out a short form, and we'll send you all the links with the resources to all the things that we talked about as well. So you have one handy email with all the information that is required.
Is over at booth 2250 as well, if you'd like to come out. We've got some consultants out there. We've got some of our tech people there who are happy to answer your questions as well.
Yep. And with that, I want to thank you for your attention. Please fill out this eval. Make sure that you let us know how useful this was. If you want either one of our contact information, it's up here. But I want to thank you for your time, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.